So to start off with, I think within a couple of years from now, we want to reach a cadence of one launch every month at least. Right, so that's the kind of the first goalpost we have, and then after that, we want to ramp up the production in a way that like we can reach one launch every week, depending on the market demand at that point of time, and then we want to one launch a day is big, really aspirational, but something which we believe is possible.
Welcome to another episode of Forbes India's Startup Fridays. So as you know, our weekly conversations with accomplished entrepreneurs, VC investors, and other folk who are doing significant work in India's startup ecosystem. I'm Hari Arakli, and my guest today is Pavan Kumar Chandana, who is co-founder and CEO of Skyroot Aerospace. Pavan started out with a dual degree in mechanical engineering and thermal science engineering from IIT Kharagpur. Spent about 5 years as an ISRO scientist before starting Skyroot in 2018 with his co-founder Naga Bharat Daka. Over the last 4 years, Pavan and Bharat and their team have reached a point where their next big step will be the space flight of their first rocket, Vikram 1, and we'll talk to him more about that. Earlier this week, Pavan and Bharat and Skyroot also made a little bit of Indian space tech startup history and some headlines, getting more than $50 million in funding. I think that was their Series B from Singapore's GIC. And possibly this could be a pivotal moment for India's private space tech startup ecosystem. And we'll talk to Pavan more about that as well. So Pavan, fantastic you're able to make time for this. Wonderful to have you with us. Welcome to Startup Fridays.
Thanks a lot, Hari. It's always a pleasure to be on Forbes, and always great to speak with you as well.
All right. So, for the general listeners, I'm sure a lot of folks actually follow the space tech startup scene in India. Many interesting companies are emerging. For the general listener, just to get us started, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you came to start Skyroot. Tell us a bit about the path that brought you there from IIT graduate to entrepreneur.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, from 2007 to 2012, I was studying mechanical engineering at IIT Kharagpur. And so during that time, in fact, there's a lot of entrepreneurial, vibe in the college, right? Where everybody wanted to become an entrepreneur. And so the same bug hit me as well. And I was very, from early days, from young age, I was very fascinated to be an entrepreneur, looking at the kind of independence one can get and the kind of impact one can generate. So I was always naturally fascinated, even in school days. But then when I came to IIT, it looks like, the vibe was real. And, we have people starting companies, people not even sitting for placements, and, people starting companies straight out of college, and also a lot of people starting companies even during college, right? That is as a part-time work, et cetera, et cetera. So looking at that vibe, I naturally got inclined towards it and always wanted to be an entrepreneur. But after completing my graduation, so I, that time I didn't have the real guts to start a company straight out of college, even though I wanted to. So I took up my biggest passion at that point of time, which is space and rockets, which created the fascination mainly through news of ISRO. In the newspapers, where we always see the PSLV launches, GSLV launches, the technology being generated, etc., etc. So that made me get into ISRO. In fact, luckily ISRO came to the campus that year, and I got interviewed there, and then got onboarded as a scientist in Vikram Sarabhai Space Center in 2012. Where I had the opportunity to work on the space program for close to 6 years, and also lucky to be part of the largest rocket ever built in the country, which is the media dubbed it as the Bahubali rocket of India, which is the GSLV Mark 3, which is also going to fuel the Gaganyaan program right now, putting the first Indians to space soon. So I was really fortunate to be part of that program. In the last years of you know, development, which are the critical years where I got to see most of the development happening, from, you know, from raw materials to manufacturing, testing, you know, integration, launch operations, the end-to-end gamut of building a rocket. I had the opportunity to be part of, as part of this program. And also, like, I was part of also like another program where I was part of the initial configuration and, you know, the design of an early phase of a rocket. And then, like, after that, you know, at that point, I was thinking, like, whether we can build a private rocket company out of India, something like what, you know, SpaceX did in the US, right? So at that point of time, the first one thought came, I thought it's absolutely impossible by looking at the, you know, because I was closely watching the, you know, difficulty in building rockets, the kind of complexity involved, et cetera, et cetera. But that thought just started off, and then with time, with few months, I realized that it is a total feasibility, and then, you know, we could build a team which can build it. And at that time, there was no policy, there was no like funding environment for deep tech startups, you know, so it's absolutely very nascent phase for the country. But took a leap of faith that, you know, something of this, I was very confident that we can get this done. And then took that leap of faith and started off in 2018 along with, you know, Bharat, who was also like, we were colleagues at ISRO before. And we were also like flatmates and, you know, we were very close friends. And I come from a mechanical engineering background. He comes from electrical and, you know, software background, where we thought like this will be a good synergy of our capabilities as well to build India's first, like, you know, privately build launch vehicles or rockets to space. So that's how it began. That's the how the journey came from thought set of, you know, wanting to become an entrepreneur to becoming a scientist, and then you know, eventually becoming an entrepreneur come a rocket engineer at Skyroot.
So the fascination with rockets has been with you for a long time. I mean, you talked about watching news about the rocket launches, ISRO's launches, and so on. Have you sort of been following it from school?
So from school, always, you know, ISRO has always a big name, and also like a lot of fascination for space science and, you know, satellite launches and rockets, etc., etc. So always here and there, I used to see the news during the school days, but especially during the college days, where we had a lot of time to read and, you know, a lot of time to watch news, etc., etc. That is when like more and more of ISRO's, you know, news is what I've seen. And also like lucky, fortunate also to follow the SpaceX journey also that time, where SpaceX is like growing leaps and bounds, and, you know, it's creating a lot of headlines internationally, right? So it's all through feeding of news is what created more interest and more fascination. But having something like ISRO in our country is was really a great inspiration to know more and, you know, to learn more about it and read more about it, and, you know, even further with that, it goes on increasing the interest in that particular subject.
Initially, you said you thought the complexities involved and the absence of any policies towards private companies in the space economy in India, all of these things, you felt initially that it would be really difficult to do something like this out of India. But then when you started researching it, you guys realized that you could actually give it a shot. Give us a sense of, you know, the kind of conversations. And then what changed your mind about, you know, deciding that it could actually be done out of India?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, in fact, like the so I was part of, as I mentioned, I was part of the GSLV Mark 3 program, and so I was also a little bit here and there with PSLV, GSLV, all most of the rocket programs, you know, at the government. And looking at the complexity, and in fact, like I was also part of one of the failures of PSLV, you know, rockets. I was during that time I was at ISRO, where like you know, almost like 50 launches, almost I think that that point of time 37 launches were successful, and the next launch failed. You know, so that kind of a you know, environment I've seen, you know, how difficult it is to build reliable and you know, complex rockets to make them working, etc. And also like read about the journey of the initial you know, program from Dr. Vikram Sarabhai for the last, it took almost I think close to 25-30 years to, you know, build a vehicle like PSLV and launch, etc. So looking at all that, you know, the initial thought was like it's completely impossible, and also like been working on the hardware, some of the really complex hardware, you know, felt that it's little impossible for a private sector to do it, especially because of whether there is a real technical know-how to build it outside the government, number one. And number two is like whether the policy will allow, and number three is whether you'll be able to raise the kind of capital which is required to raise to develop a rocket. So all these were doubts, but then because this thought really fascinated me because of the entrepreneur in me always wanted to explore new stuff, and this sounded really fascinating. And at that time, internationally, if you see, like, there was like companies like Rocket Lab coming up, you know, a lot of new small satellite startups, launch vehicle startups coming up at that point of time. And in fact, like, looking at them, it was very inspiring, because like, there are many of these startups hail from countries which never had a space program. So naturally, you know, coming from a country which has a space program, which has an ecosystem of 60 years, you know, so it always felt that there's a good feasibility. But after deeper analysis, after looking at the ecosystem, after, you know, also thinking about the thought process of creating a policy for the private sector, etc. So all that, you know, crystallized into a thought that definitely it can be done. And then that's how, you know, within just probably a few weeks of the confirmation from myself that, you know, this could be done, is when, like, decided to quit ISRO and start Skyroot.
All right. Tell us about Skyroot Aerospace itself. What was the original idea about what kind of rocket you wanted to build? And then maybe we can talk about what you all have done over the last 4 years.
Yeah. So in fact, like, when we started off, like, we thought of building a rocket which will be very reliable, which has like very less number of parts, and which can be built very fast and get into the market very fast, and start generating good revenues, good margins, to build a very solid, sustainable business, of launching especially small satellites. Because in fact, in the next 10 years, it is estimated that more than 30,000 satellites will be launched, and out of them, 80% of them will be small satellites. And small satellites, like our smartphones, satellites are getting smaller. And small satellites are anything which is defined as below 500 kilograms in mass. And many satellites are even, you'll not believe, like 1 kilogram, 2 kilogram, you know, even there are a lot of satellites which are below 10 kilograms doing marvelous work in space. Like, for example, they click pictures of resolution of 3 meters, you know, from space in a 10 kg, 10 kilogram satellites, which was impossible like probably 10 years ago. So that transition is happening in the sector, and the biggest volume of satellites which will be required in the next 10 years will be small satellites. And then that showed an opportunity of building smaller rockets for launching these smaller satellites. And many of these satellites also require like dedicated rides, you know, like we require a dedicated ride to go from our home to a particular place. Let's say point A to point B, we book a cab, you know, which will be a dedicated ride for us. Like that, even the satellite customers are also looking for dedicated rides to space, because different satellites require different orbits, different altitudes, different inclinations of orbits. So various, you know, new requirements are coming up in the satellite segment. So that's where we thought, like, we'll build a launch vehicle or a rocket which is suitable for launching these kind of small satellites. And that's where that's where the Vikram 1 has been designed, and Vikram 2 and Vikram 3 are upgrades of Vikram 1, which can launch much larger gamut of satellites, you know, much wider payload ranges can be launched with these Vikram series of vehicles. That's how these have been architected to launch specifically small satellites to orbit.
I do want to ask you a little bit more about Vikram 1's, you know, the technologies that have gone into it. But before that, can you talk about, you know, from a business model perspective, what are some of the features of Skyroot that you think will disrupt the space launch market?
Yeah. So in fact, like, you know, so coming out of India, there is a natural advantage of cost. In fact, that was like one of the key differentiating factors in which, like, we thought, like, Skyroot could be something really sustainable global space company to start off with, in spite of having the really good technical know-how available in the country. You know, other than that, the cost is also a major advantage. But like, when we started off, we didn't want cost only to be the differentiating factor. You know, so we really thought, like, we should build the next generation kind of vehicle which will fuel the small satellite launches in the coming decade. And then, like, what we chose, the architecture of these vehicles, we chose, in fact, like, we wanted to build the full vehicle with carbon fiber. You know, so we'll be like Vikram series will be like one of the world's you know, first few vehicles which are completely built with carbon fiber structure. You know, carbon fiber, as you know, like, is the lightest material in the aerospace you know, industry today. And you know, it's just, so, like, traditionally in aerospace industry, we use metals like steel, or aluminium, you know, which are like heavier when compared to carbon fiber. And the lighter the rocket is, the more payload you can launch to space. So that's where like we built India's first, you know, all carbon fiber in the space sector is what we set out to build through Skyroot. And also like we're using a lot of 3D printing. In fact, like one of the engines in the rocket, which actually puts the satellites into orbit in the final stage. So it's a completely, completely 3D printed engine. And also like the fuel which is used there is also like meant for long duration missions, so it can stay in space for a longer duration of time. It can do long duration space missions, which some customers want, you know, etc. So we have created the architecture with state of the art technology like carbon composites, 3D printing, and also like we created a very flexible vehicle for a lot of customers, so we can reach multiple orbits in the same mission, right? For example, you know, which is enabled by this 3D printed stage, which uses the kind of propellants which can stay in space for a long duration of time, enabling these multi-orbit insertions, you know, where like, for example, you go in a cab with four people, each one wants a different destination. Similarly, and when we put like multiple satellites in a rocket, each one want to have go for different destinations, which can be enabled with the architecture which we are building, which is also like very rare in the market today. So we have clubbed in latest technology, more flexibility, taking into customer-centric, you know, needs, architecture, which is required to get into the rocket. So all these we amalgamated, and then we designed the Vikram series, which is set to launch small satellites from next year.
Right. So this year you're pretty close to commercialization, right? The first test of Vikram 1 space test. And so just give us a quick snapshot update on what you all have done over the last 12 to 6 months.
Yeah, so in fact, like, so commercializing will be next year. You know, so this year we'll be having a small, you know, demonstrator kind of a launch, which will prove technology, but not commercialization. And so commercialization of Vikram 1 is, you know, which we are targeting 1 year from now, which in within a year from now is what, you know, we are targeting right now. And so in fact, like we have a couple of months before, we have tested a full rocket stage, which is our third stage of the rocket with carbon fiber built, you know, architecture. This full duration testing has been completed, and then a couple of more stages will be tested in the coming months. And then like, you know, and also demonstrator launch to test some technologies. And then within a year, we get to integrate towards a full commercial launch.
Potentially, who might be your first customers? Can you give us a sense of companies, organizations who are interested in your rockets? I got to see the recent press release about your funding, and I think you all had mentioned something about already talking to potential customers. So give us a quick update on that.
Yeah, so in fact, like we have been talking to a lot of customers internationally. And so out of that, we have a few customers signed up for our first launch as well. And many of these customers are building smaller satellites for Earth observation and communication needs. And also, like, interestingly, also doing, you know, science experiments as well, right? So something like which study the sun, you know, etc. So it's like a mix of payloads coming for Earth observation means like the satellites click images from space. At various resolutions in various bandwidths, like for example, there are like satellites doing optical imaging. You know, the satellites doing multispectral imaging. You know, etc. So these all come under Earth observation satellites, and some of them are flying. Will be flying in our vehicle in the first couple of launches. And there are communication satellites which are built for IoT. IoT is like you know, as you know, like. We have a lot of devices which are IoT. In the next 10 years, trillions of devices are going to be, you know, connected through the internet, called Internet of Things. And then a space-based Internet of Things can really expand this connection to the next level. That's where like plenty of companies are building satellite constellations for creating global IoT. So anywhere in the world, you know, you can get access to, you know, low bitrate internet. for connecting things, which is estimated to connect, you know, several billions of devices over the next decade through space-based internet. So such satellites also will be flying in our vehicles. So basically, we have a like good mix of science and commercial Earth observation communication satellites, which will be flying in our vehicle.
All right. Once you get to commercialization and beyond that, I would imagine over a period of time, you'll get to some sort of a steady state operation at that point. Give us a sense of what kind of cadence you would like to aim for and what might be possible in how many launches. I think previously you've spoken about even the possibility of one launch every day.
Yeah. So, the vehicle which we're building is of the capacity of something like, you know, it can launch up to 400 kilograms to space, and then with Vikram 2 and 3 up to, you know, 700, 800 kilograms, you know, so they're pretty decently, you know, big vehicles. For example, the vehicle height is something like, you know, some 7-storied building tall, right? So it's, okay, they're pretty big vehicles, where like mass production is definitely a big challenge, which we want to solve by design and by the architecture we chose, and, you know, the kind of manufacturing techniques and the kind of materials we're using, etc. So to start off with, I think within a couple of years from now, we want to reach a cadence of one launch every month at least, right? So okay, that's the kind of the first goalpost we have, and then after that, you know, we want to ramp up the production in a way that like we can reach one launch every week, you know, depending on the market demand at that point of time, and then like, you know, so we want to one launch a day is big, really aspirational, but something which we believe is possible, but it's highly aspirational, you know, and also like that also should come from the need of the customers, really how much payload to be launched to space, etc. For small satellites.
Tell us a bit more about some of the innovations that have gone into Vikram 1.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, it's an all carbon fiber vehicle, you know, so all the structures are built with, you know, lightweight carbon fiber. And then like the engine, the liquid engine, which actually puts the satellite into orbit in the final stage. So that's a completely, fully 100% 3D printed engine. The number of moving parts compared to the other private companies in the world who will be competing with us is like, you know, probably very, very less in our vehicle, making it very, very reliable. So the less number of parts, the less failure points, and the more reliable the vehicle is. And also the vehicle also has a, you know, long duration capability in space, where once the rocket launches the first satellite to space, still, you know, the upper stage of the rocket can stay in space for a longer duration of time, putting multiple satellites into multiple orbits. And also it can do long duration space missions, like, you know, probably even interplanetary missions can be possible with our vehicle, which is also like very rare in the market today. So all these are, you know, innovations. Some innovations are on the vehicle materials and the kind of propellant systems we are using. Set of innovations are, customer centricness, where like what the customer, it's based on research of what the customers want, what are the different kind of problems which they are facing, which the vehicle can solve, which other people are unable to solve, right? All these coming together is what, is bundled towards building our Vikram 1.
Today, how long does it take you to put together one rocket?
Because it will be the first rocket, you know, so together maybe like 4 to 6 months to put together a rocket, including all, you know, everything in the rocket. Rocket is several hundreds of components, you know, built together, several different kinds of systems, avionics, then there is like software in those avionics, then there is like the structures, and there's propulsion systems, and then there's like actuators, then sensors, right? So there's several components all together to put, probably like 4 to 6 months for the first couple of rockets, and then like with mass production, parallel production, and with supply chain integration, etc., it can reach once a month within 2 years from now is the target, and then down the line, you know, we want to innovate even further, to one launch a week, which is also like our big ambition going forward.
And your main manufacturing facility is setting it up in Hyderabad, is it?
Yeah, so it's like distributed. Some manufacturing happens at Hyderabad, and some manufacturing happens outside of Hyderabad as well, across the country. But the launch will be happening at the spaceport, which is Sriharikota. Right, so it's just a very distributed system.
All right. Okay. So if you step back and look at the sort of global space market today, and you spoke about this a little bit in the beginning about, the large opportunity with small satellites and so on. Can you expand on that and talk about what are all the different developments today in the global space economy, which makes, this a large opportunity for Indian space tech startups as well?
Yeah. So in fact, for example, just to give an understanding, every year there'll be slightly over 100 rocket launches, in the world. And now it's increasing more and more, thanks to SpaceX, which is almost doing one launch a week now this year. So that kind of growth is there going forward, even though it's for the last few years it's saturated around 100 launches, now it's ramping up more, with more and more launches going up, and also the cost of launch is going down. As you do more number of launches, as you produce more vehicles, and as you innovate on these vehicles, as more and more private sector companies come into the picture, so the cost to get into space goes down, and when the cost goes down, there'll be a new markets which will be generated, which could not have been generated if the cost was high. One of these will be for example, today building a CubeSat can be done with few tens of lakhs of rupees, but launching a CubeSat is very, very costly. So once those literally CubeSats or these small satellites which are in the form of 1U, 2U, 3U cubes, right? So these satellites are what are actually democratizing space access, right? Even students are building, a lot of commercial companies are building these smaller satellites for Earth observation, communication, except various applications, commercial applications, right? So once the cost of launch goes down, and literally there'll be lot and lot more demand coming up for, launching these satellites. Probably we'll imagine a world, in the next 5 to 10 years where every student would launch one satellite, before graduating out, right? So that future can be created once the cost of launch goes down, once it becomes more accessible, more reliable, right? And that's the problem we want to solve long term. With Vikram series, we want to be the lowest cost and most reliable launcher for launching dedicated small satellites, right? So that's the kind of impact we want to create. And so once we get into market, there'll be a lot more opportunities for people to launch these satellites. And especially the satellites like our mobile phones and rockets are actually tougher to get smaller and innovate, and then transformational change in technology is difficult, but when it comes to satellite, that transformational change is faster, and it's going to happen soon, and satellites are going to become even smaller. What a 10 kilogram satellite is going to do was able to do 5 years ago, today it is a 3 kilogram satellite is able to do, and after 5 years even probably a half a kilogram satellite would be able to do the same thing, right? So that kind of fast transformation is happening in satellites. So more and more people will be able to afford launching into satellites as even the costs of launch come down, right? So this is a good combination where launch costs are coming down, satellites are becoming smaller and more affordable, right? So that way there'll be a big explosion of opportunity in launching satellites is what we see. And satellites is one of them. And also there's a lot of, development happening in creating an in-space ecosystem, right? So that means launching to orbit is one thing, and then movement into orbit, in-space logistics, for example, a couple of companies from India are doing, one of the example is Bellatrix, which is doing logistics service, within space. After getting into space, they move the satellites or payloads to different orbital destinations, etc. So that is one area of expansion where after getting into space, going into some location which we want. And also like in-space economy also like involves creating space stations, commercial space stations in orbit, in low Earth orbit, and also interplanetary missions to study other planets which are also happening commercially, which was not there like probably 10 years ago. And also like within satellite applications, there are like plenty of applications coming up. As the satellite cost goes down, even the data cost goes down. As the data cost goes down, probably, you know, we can imagine a time where probably every farmer will observe their farms through, their mobile app, which is connected to satellite data. In fact, like today, satellites can detect pests in farms. You know, it can identify where the fish is available in the oceans through the thermal imaging, right? So there is like, you can identify minerals for various, industries, and we can track greenhouse gases for governments, right? So the plenty of applications which become affordable. And as more and more applications come from the downstream side and more satellites, will be launched. And as the cost goes down, even more and more satellites will be launched. And so it's just a very good dynamics and environment where like everything is related. And what we set out to solve at Skyroot is basically the launch cost, which is the driver of the space economy.
Yeah, it's really interesting how things are changing from sort of pure enterprise use to all the way now to individual consumer use. In fact, I think the latest iPhone that got released, one of the features that I think Apple mentioned was that they have now the ability to have an emergency SOS via satellite. So really interesting. And since you mentioned Bellatrix, maybe a good time to ask you about your partnerships. I think Bellatrix is one of the companies that you've partnered with in India. And as I understand, you also have some partnerships with some Australian companies. Tell us about what are the different things you all are partnering on.
Yeah, so with respect to Bellatrix, in fact, like we're committed to building a great ecosystem within the country, and Bellatrix has been doing great work, for the last, I think like they're one of the earliest startups in the country. They're also building some things which is very complementary to what Skyroot is building. So what we do is like we are mastering Earth to space transportation, where like with the rocket we launch from Earth to space. And Bellatrix is taking it to the next step, like by, building only in-space transportation systems. That means like they're building something called in-space, something similar to an in-space taxi, where like, they're able to move in space, after getting into space, move in space and put various payloads into various destinations, right? So it's a very complementary kind of service, which probably a lot of our customers are also looking at, where like we launch on the, from Earth to space, and then from there on, the last mile delivery is continued by, Bellatrix vehicle to, various customers, right? So that is one thing which we're doing very interesting with, Bellatrix, and we want to put together a launch with their, with their vehicle, which they call as orbital transfer vehicle for in-space logistics. And and whatever the recent Australian MOUs which we have signed is for actually launching some of their satellites to orbit, CubeSats, smaller satellites, again for Earth observation and communication requirements. And one of the startup is also building a science payload, for studying the atmosphere and for the outer space radiation, etc., etc. So it's a good combination. Again, like we are able to launch satellites for commercial Earth observation, commercial communication, and for science experiments as well.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about sort of the whole entrepreneurial ecosystem for space tech startups in India. One of the points you made right at the beginning was initially you thought that the absence of a policy was might be one of the obstacles. But over the last 4 years, of course, a lot of things have changed. India has they've established in space, and I think the policies are much more established. Can you kind of walk us through a quick snapshot of some of the most important changes that have happened, which now makes it a little more easy for private space tech startups in India?
Yeah. So in fact, like one of the biggest change which has happened is the space reforms, which were announced during COVID time. Right. So that time the government has announced that the the government is opening up the sector to private players, where people companies can build their own spacecrafts, their own vehicles, and launch them, and then they're going to get all the permissions and regulatory clearances for doing what they want to do. And with this, like, they want to expand the market to a larger pie for India across the world. So that was the aim. And in fact, it will be very surprising to know that even though India is considered like the top five spacefaring nations in the world today, with over 60 years of history, and ISRO being like, the first country which has succeeded to, go to Mars in the first attempt, we have been doing like really, really great work as the as a space organization in the country. Even though we are the top five, our global share is less than 2%. In the space segment, right? Even though we have all the technology in the world, even though we have like all the capabilities for any kind of space services, technologies, etc., but still, like, we are less than 2% of the global market share, which the government realized, and then we felt that once they expanded to the private players, there is a more and more opportunity for creating revenues and foreign investments and foreign lot of forex coming into the country, and also like a lot of services which India can do for the world. So that's where like the government has opened up the sector, which is a major reform in the country, because without that, no real space company can operate properly. For example, we can build rockets, but we cannot launch without a policy. And launching is a lot of hand-holding, because it requires a lot of hand-holding on safety aspects, a lot of hand-holding on insurance aspects. If something causes damage in space, or, before going to space, etc. So it's not an easy thing. It requires a lot of work, a lot of a team to be formed, which needs to work on all these things, creating a legal environment, and also like promoting investments, etc. So this is not a small change. I think it's a major change which has happened in the country over the last 2 years, thanks to the government for this. And because of this only, I think that is like the first tipping point towards creating a very large space ecosystem within the country. And so now there is no regulatory uncertainty as such. Fundamentally, the government is aligned to support and created an agency specifically to promote and support this ecosystem called InSpace, like you mentioned. And so one of the biggest, in fact, like when we were raising capital in 2018, 2019, so the biggest problem which we faced was like, where is the policy? So you're building what you're doing, but can we even do this in India? Right. So all these kind of questions are now sorted out, so now there's like even for putting in fact, like for space companies which are capital intensive, I think one of the biggest raw materials in addition to the rocket materials or the satellite materials is also capital, right? So that is like a raw material for us to launch, to build the product and actually launch to commercialization. Right. So that is also becomes easier now. And then, getting all the permissions to do the launch gets easier right now. So we have a very convenient environment for anybody to build a space solution today in India because of these reforms. Right. So And again, adding to that, India has been an ecosystem, space ecosystem, for the last 60 years. So it's a very deadly combination. And then I think when properly good innovative companies come up, I think there is no limit to growth.
So let's talk about this aspect of capital in the ecosystem. Would you say that Skyroot getting $51 million straight away in Series B from a very well-known investor like GIC, sort of an important moment in the Indian space startups history?
Absolutely. I think this is a very, very important moment, because always, like, we were looking for that time where we hit that financial glass ceiling for a space company, right? Getting it to the Series B level of capital, which is actually a real sign of growth of the ecosystem, especially with the space ecosystem, because where it is capital intensive, which leads a lot of capital to go international. So I think we were fortunate enough to, break that ceiling and, open doors for many, many investors more to come in. And I'm sure like this will act like a good start for other investors also to get comfort. effort and to put in more capital in various companies across India. And we really know how tough it is to break the ceiling, because a lot of things had to go together to get to this stage, you know, when it comes to the policy, when it comes to the kind of hardware testing, the level of maturity the company needs to get into to get here. You know, all of them luckily have come together to this big moment, and it's a great start for the space ecosystem.
Yeah, and I guess it's also worth calling out that some of your early investors backed you. Also, I think definitely really helped. Some of these early investors who've backed some of the other Indian space tech startups also who've been doing that, whether individuals or early stage investors who are willing to back deep tech startups in India. And of course, in your own case, Ram Sriram's Sherpalo Ventures, folks like Amit Singhal, Neeraj Arora, and Greenco Group. It's great that these kinds of investors are willing to, you know, get you guys started off, and then now there are investors like GIC willing to step in. Specific to Skyroot, what did they like about Skyroot? I'm talking about GIC.
Yeah, in fact, like we have demonstrated a really good hardware progress, and in fact, like we built a phenomenal team, which in fact they felt would be a winning team, in fact, like they were able to appreciate the complexity of building a space system, especially, you know, launch vehicles, which is the most complex part of the space ecosystem right now. And so appreciating that, in fact, like they have a phenomenal research team, which did a good market research internationally. And also, like, they were able to even gauge the technology. In fact, I never believed that a fund could do such deep technical diligence, which they were able to do. So overall, in a nutshell, basically, it's the team which they really liked, which they felt that it could go global with the kind of the rigor and the maturity it has, the number one. And number two is they felt that even the market is ready for such a good product. And being a long-term investor, they looked at the long-term growth history, which is phenomenal for a rocket company. So that is something which they're able to take a long-term view. They took a good look at the kind of hardware which were built, which were proven. And in fact, like, we were lucky that, you know, almost all the major tests which we have done today, everything has succeeded the first time. And that also really shows the kind of maturity. In fact, it's very difficult to get things working, at least a complex system working in the first time. That's what we were able to do with the kind of culture we built with the company, with the kind of, the mindset, the rigor, attention to detail we were able to give to the designs which we are building, et cetera. So it's a lot of things coming together. In a nutshell, the team and the market ecosystem, and also the long-term growth potential, and also the India story. Yeah, all together really helped in cracking this.
And at a more broader level, if you look at both your own upstream suppliers as well as downstream high-tech startups in India who might be able to take advantage of your launches once you get going, would you say that more broadly, there is now more global investor interest in the Indian deep tech scene? You know, folks willing to fund them like how they have started to fund you, upwards of 50 million, 100 million, these kinds of things. Do you see that happening in the, you know, next couple of years?
Yeah, I think, basically it's highly dependent on, beyond this, it's actually how we prove to get into the market, get sustainable revenues, you know, etc. is going to decide, because the capital is, Now it boils down to simple business fundamentals, you know, how much revenue, what is the kind of expansion plans, right? So how much is the potential for growth, you know, et cetera, so basically this kind of capital is, is enough to get into this commercial mode of business and, you know, get completely operational, and then the results will show clearly. So once we get really good, we are able to showcase good business margins and, you know, sustainable growth, then any investor, it doesn't need to be a deep tech investor, any investors would put chip in capital.
Right. And since you mentioned your team, how many people today in Skyroot?
So we just crossed 100 people, and And so I think that's a good tip for our initial launches.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple of things related to what you all have done so far at Skyroot, again, from a sort of an entrepreneurial perspective, specific to building a high-tech space venture out of India. What are some of the toughest challenges you had to solve so far, both in terms of your product and tech and your business operations, whether it's hiring or convincing investors, setting up your factory and regulations and so on?
So this is the first most toughest aspect was raising the capital, you know, so because we need a good sum of capital to go operational, right? So to scale, to hire teams, to build the hardware, to test them, you know, so it's a bit of capital intensive start which is required to go operational. I would say like biggest challenge is raising capital, because each round we raised, we were breaking the ceiling at that point of time. So our seed round was the largest seed round at that point of time. Then it was the largest series A at that point of time. And then the largest series B at that point. So each time we had to break that ceiling, which was very, very difficult for the first company, you know, breaking this financial ceiling was very, very difficult. And in fact, like we never raised capital before, you know, so we were all technocrats, you know. Both the founders were, you know, scientists at ISRO. We never knew how to raise capital. So it was really difficult for us to actually, you know, raise this sum of capital to get going. So that was a big challenge. In fact, the first three rounds happened mostly like when there was like no clarity on the regulatory environment. So it was really, really challenging. So that was number one. And number two is, actually getting the right talent, I would say is also a good, a decent problem, because most of the expertise available in what we are building is in the government. So in fact, like we had to train, you know, people from ancillary industries and then bring them on board, then, you know, train them to build these space systems, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that was like, a cycle which we have done to create this talent pool within the country. We are still, you know, going to expand it more and more, you know, space technocrats we're going to generate over the next few years, also. Right. So that is another challenge which we faced, and getting the right talent. But of course, we navigated through various strategies around that. And another big challenge is the supply chain, you know. So basically we're also dependent on a lot of supply chain in the country, which is built for the space or the defense ecosystems for the government basically. So integrating them to build our products, and that too, like, you know, whatever we're building are slightly, you know, we're pushing the boundaries of the technology, you know, whether it is like carbon composites or 3D printing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the industry is not like 100% ready for, you know, manufacturing the products of the kind of quality and the kind of technology which we are looking at. So that also took some time of handholding, and then, you know, getting things on time also was a big challenge. So supply chain challenges is also like one big challenge which we had to navigate through. And policy wise, of course, you know, the government has taken the bigger hand in that, and so they were able to create all the kind of regulations required, and they all are going on right now. They were very closely engaging with us to create all the kind of necessary regulations required for us to operate well in the right amount of time which we want. So that side, I think government is really doing a good job in that front, I would say. So overall, I think these are the challenges which we faced in building Skyroot.
All right. Today, if you were to kind of give your top two or three sort of bullet point, advice to other aspiring space tech entrepreneurs, what would you say would be your top three lessons from building Skyroot and bringing it this far?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson is, I think, think really big. So often we will be tricked into starting something, you know, once it is operational, then building the next big thing and then et cetera, et cetera. Right. So it's the effort required into building something really, really big and something, you know, not so, you know, something very small is actually the same. And in fact, in space, everything is long. So I think the choice of the goal should be big. I think we should solve a really big problem in the space tech sector to start off with, even though it may seem like impossible or it may seem like too tough or it may take too long, etc. So all these barriers, I think we should break at the initial phases of starting the company, and then target something really big, number one. And in fact, we'll be surprised to see that the tougher and the more ambitious, the bigger the problem is, the person is solving, the more easier everything else becomes. People would want to join you, you know, people would want to invest in you. So everything, so generally what happens is people think that big things are tougher to achieve, but actually big things are easier to achieve, if you see, you know, from our experience. So that is one big, you know, advice I would say. And second thing is, of course, you know, that always walk the talk. You know, it's easier to talk in the space sector and then, you know, showcase some, you know, really fancy stuff and then really not, you know, end up succeeding in building the right hardware, which is required to succeed in the market. Right. So, so that is also something because, as you know, space is like so fascinating, you know, media loves it, you know, people love it. It's easier to get, you know, carried away with the glory. So that is something which I think is very important to see that, you know, honestly, people are building the right hardware required to succeed and do all the testing properly and, you know, build a great team, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, like, so we are still an early stage startup yet to go commercialize. But these are some of our learnings for a startup to start with.
If you were to start Skyroot today, is there anything that you would do differently?
I think everything we would do differently. So it's a great learning. So I think if we were to start Skyroot today, we would have been like probably at least 2 to 3 times faster. We would have raised like, you know, faster capital and we would have, you know, built, you know, a lot of things way quicker and better, more efficiently. You know, so in fact, we were in the learning phase for a long period of time. And now with these learnings, I think definitely, I think we can do everything quicker and better.
All right. Give us a rough timetable for the first technology demonstrator space flight of Vikram 1. What's the latest?
Yeah, so a technology demonstrator of you know, all the technologies would be like you know, by the end of the year, and then like within a year from now will be the orbital you know, flight where like we launch commercial customers to space as well, and then like after that we ramp up the production to target once a month to start with, and then like slowly to reach once a week down the line.
All right, very nice, wonderful update on Skyroot, Pawan. Thank you so much again. Definitely hope to keep the conversation going.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Hari. Thanks a lot.
All right. That was Pawan Kumar Chandana, co-founder and CEO of Skyroot Aerospace. That's it for this week's Startup Fridays. I'll be back next week with another conversation. Until then, wherever you've been listening to us, I hope you're staying safe and doing well. Have a wonderful Friday and a great weekend ahead.